Hi, and welcome back to the Mindful Sport Performance Podcast. I'm Dr. Keith Kaufman.
And I'm Dr. Tim Pineau. And today as our guest, we have fifth-year senior women's lacrosse player, Eliana Cassell. She goes by Elle. Elle plays at Marymount University. And she was a member of that team when they won the 2017 Division III ECAC Championships. She is majoring in nursing with a minor in pre-physician's assistant. And after graduation, she hopes to either pursue pediatric nursing or becoming an army nurse. Elle has also been practicing mindfulness throughout her college career as her team began using MSPE the year before she joined. And they've continued to implement the program over the past 5 years. Full disclosure, so I've been the person consulting with Elle's team. So Elle and I have also known each other for a while. And she was gracious enough to agree to lead us in a meditation. But before you start that, Elle, I just wanted to say how happy and grateful I am that you were willing to come on the show.
Yeah, I'm super excited. I'm ready to talk about my experience.
Great. If you wanted to kind of lead us through a brief meditation.
We'll give our standard disclaimer real quick first and just make sure you're in a safe place. We're excited to see what Elle has in store for us. And so if it becomes clear that you should not be doing this practice while doing another activity, then maybe just listen for right now and come back to it and do the practice during a quieter moment.
Yeah, so I did this meditation with some patients at a psychiatric unit I had clinical on. And I used what I learned from Dr. P and talked about mindfulness and how it can help with mental health and being able to take that 5 minutes to just relax and kind of ground yourself. I actually had a lot of people come up to me and thank me and they enjoyed it. So usually if you're alone, you're going to want to sit quietly. You can set a timer for 5 to 10 minutes if you don't have anyone leading you. And first, you just want to bring your attention to the present and begin focus on your breathing. You can close your eyes if you're comfortable or find a neutral space to kind of let your gaze rest. To begin with your eyes open, I'm going to have you notice 5 things that you have not noticed before. What can you see? What's around you? Maybe it's a chip in the paint on the wall or a reflection or a new object around the room. And kind of pick those 5 things that you can just notice right away. And once you've noticed them, just let it go and move on. It's there. Then next, you can keep your eyes closed again if you need to. But what are 4 things you can feel and touch? Maybe you can feel the pressure of your feet on the floor or your clothes resting on your body, the weight of your shoulders. Are you tense? Are your hands flexed? Is your tongue pressed hard against the roof of your mouth? Are you feeling hot? Do you like the texture of your clothing? So find 4 things that you can feel right now and recognize those and let them go. Now we're going to move on to what are 3 things you can hear? So find 3 things that you can hear. Maybe you haven't noticed before. Can you hear your family in the background? Are there birds chirping outside? Car alarms, sirens, notice them and let them go. Next, what are 2 things you can smell? So there is maybe an overflowing trash can or a fresh cup of coffee, your own perfume. And lastly, what is 1 thing that you can taste? Have you just brushed your teeth? Do you have coffee breath? Do you happen to have some gum or a mint in your mouth? And recognize that and just let it go. feel free to open your eyes when you're comfortable. That's that.
Thank you so much for leading us through that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm aware, this is a real role reversal for us. I'm normally leading these. But what was that like for you to lead this?
It was a little less nerve wracking right now. There's only two people. But when I first did it, I was extremely nervous. My hands were sweating and I just kept thinking, I was like, my voice isn't as relaxing as Dr. P's. Like, nobody's going to enjoy this. And actually found myself being very critical of myself. But just now, it was just very comfortable. I actually kind of do this meditation when I'm feeling stressed, feeling very anxious, and just like to just look around and notice things that I'm maybe not noticing because I'm just so stressed out, or if I'm at clinical and kind of missing something and not being able to figure out what's going on with my patient, it's nice to just sit down at the desk and kind of listen for something or look for something. Like, what have I not noticed before because I'm too busy on autopilot?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I think in various meditations, we're often right using the senses to bring us back into the present moment. But I like that it kind of covers all of the senses, mm-hmm. And really emphasizes that idea that when we're not present, when we're not paying attention, like, we miss stuff.
Yeah, you miss a lot. That's one thing I've learned in my practice, and was just how much you miss when you're not aware. And I remember significantly my freshman year talking about being on autopilot, and you're like, it's like you're driving somewhere and you don't even know how you got home. Mm-hmm. Like, you just weren't even there. And I definitely think that I was doing that a lot in all aspects of my life. I mean, in class, I'm thinking about the next assignment, the next test, what else could I be doing right now, kind of thing. And then I would find myself behind in those classes because I just wasn't present in the actual moment.
Yeah.
Two things that I noticed in this experience. One is just an interesting reflection on a judgment I found myself having early on, where we started with the sense of sight and we did five things. And I've never done quite this practice before. And I found myself looking ahead and thinking, oh my gosh, am I going to have to find five things I'm tasting right now? and recognize, wow, I'm getting ahead of myself. Let's see how this unfolds. And actually noticing, it's like, oh, okay, we're going down. So I'm not going to have to think about five things that I'm tasting. And I was like, okay, that's good. And just to be able to notice that, like, how even in a practice like this, we have so many thoughts and reactions and judgments. Mm-hmm. So that was just an interesting experience I found myself having. The other thing that I really liked about this, and in full disclosure, before we started recording, you mentioned that you had done this particular exercise before, and especially with maybe some younger populations.
Yeah.
And just how tangible this is. You know, so one of the things, a question we get a lot in MSPE is, how might you adapt some of these concepts for younger athletes or for younger performers? And I feel like an exercise like this is so accessible.
Absolutely.
And maybe you could speak about that just a little bit. When you've done it, you said you did it on your clinical work, and how kids have reacted to a practice like this.
Yeah. So this specific hospital I was at, it was a psych hospital in Falls Church, and they have four different floors. So they have pediatric, which is like, I mean, 3-year-olds to 13. Ish, depending on their maturity level and kind of how severe things are. And then they have adolescence, which is 13 to 18. And then they have the adult, and then they had an eating disorder unit. So we were rotated through all of them. For my teaching project, I just happened to be with adolescents. And it was definitely, it was hard to pick a meditation just because I had a wide variety of ages. I had like 13-year-olds and 17-year-olds who are at very different maturity levels. But I think with like a meditation like this, or even a body scan is one of my personal favorites. I think those are extremely easy for people to understand, if that makes sense. And they can be done in a short amount of time, because a lot of kids don't have that attention span in general. So I think starting small and starting with things that they can understand at their developmental level is very important. So just because I'm in nursing, I understand the developmental levels. I think it's important. I love mindfulness. I think that we should kind of start practicing it earlier with children, but it's important to do it at their developmental level. So for this meditation, it was important for me to find something that fit that description, and using your five senses is something that everyone can do.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, we talk a lot in MSBE, you know, about like how adaptable the program is and the importance of tailoring it, right? Tailoring it to the specific sport, you know, to the specific team. But right, this is like another layer of that. Like, you know, especially if you're working with youth athletes, there are all these adaptations that you would need to think about, right? To meet people where they are.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I never realized how important developmental level is until you kind of start getting in that hospital setting and working with kids. And, you have to be careful what you say. And I think if you gear this practice to younger athletes, you have to, like you were saying, meet them where they are. And I know I nanny a kid, he's 8. He is huge into baseball. He is very, very passionate. He definitely is much like me when I was a freshman. He is very hard on himself. He has one mistake, he just constantly thinks about it. Like, I'll hear about it for like a week and a half. Mm-hmm. And just the other day, I picked him up from his game and I told him, look, Jack, like, you make mistakes and everybody makes mistakes. It's fine. It's okay. But what will set you apart and what will make you a better athlete is if you can recognize your mistake and fix it and move on and forgive yourself, because there's nothing you can do about it right now. You can't go back in the past and fix what happened in that game. So why don't we work on our catching, work on our throwing? Like, let's go practice in the backyard so that when your next game comes, we can relax and not be so hard on ourselves. So, yeah, I try to work with him as much as I can, because I like see myself in him. I see that like head case starting to brew up and I'm like, I need to help him.
Well, short of any labeling yourself as a head case, maybe we don't have to go that far. I picked up on that right away that you said, you know, this reminds me of me when I was a freshman. And I know one of the big things we were hoping to chat with you about today is how things have changed with you over the last 5 years. And it sounds like your mindset has changed quite a bit and sounds like it's influenced you, of course, on the lacrosse field. But also now, obviously, you're training to be a nurse. It's influencing the way you're hoping to practice professionally. Mm-hmm. And so you have these wise words for the guy that you're nannying. So what has changed for you? What has this journey been like? We're really curious.
Okay. So my freshman year, it was the second year we were working with it, and Coach Kate had introduced it to us freshmen, and was like, it's very important. Had no idea what mindfulness was. I never meditated in my life. Just no clue. Just had no idea what I was doing. I didn't even know what to expect, really. And my freshman year athletically, I was in a group of midfielders, and our team was pretty big. Our team was very successful. I wasn't looking at a position with a lot of playing time. So when I did get that playing time, I was hyper-focused on my performance. I was very hard on myself. And if I got taken out, I would just think about what I did to get taken out instead of, you're getting taken out because you just ran a lot, you need to take a break kind of thing. Right. And I just remember my freshman year, I would I would cry at half times. I would cry after every game. It didn't matter if we won, if I played well, if I didn't play well. It was just brutal. Like, after every game, I found myself frustrated with myself and constantly thinking about what I could do better and what I did wrong, and thinking about, like, each play where I messed up for hours, days after a game. And I also was very emotional in my playing. So, like, if I got checked, I would retaliate. I would be frustrated. I would be very vocal about my frustration. And we started doing this practice, and we not only had the meetings with Dr. P, we had the, we take a Dr. P lap. So we do two laps at the beginning of practice, one just to warm up, and the second one is to kind of ground ourselves, get into that mindset that we're at practice, whatever's outside of practice doesn't affect how I play, kind of thing. We also did a lot of, like, take a Dr. P moment. And my freshman year, I really didn't understand it, and I really didn't see the importance of this practice. And then my junior year, things really finally clicked. I was a starter. I was playing every game. My body was wrecked. I mean, I was exhausted all the time. And I don't even know what it was. I don't know what made it click, but finally I just realized, like, it's a mistake. I can't do anything about it. And I started to really get into my practice. And, like, before I was going to bed, I was really setting time aside for meditations. And after clinicals, I would set aside time to kind of sit in my car and take that 5-minute moment, do a 5-minute meditation of just, like, okay, I just got done at the hospital. It was hard. I'm tired. I'm going to practice now. What happened at the hospital doesn't affect practice. It doesn't affect how I play. Whatever grade I have in my class isn't going to affect how I'm going to perform today, right here, right now. But I really wish I knew when it clicked and what made it click. But I really did. I finally woke up and, like, finally felt a change in the practice. And I think in our meetings, we talk about it all the time. It's not an easy thing to do. It doesn't happen overnight. And for me, it definitely didn't happen overnight. It was a very slow, gradual process. And when I was finally an older person on the team, I just realized, like, I cannot be wasting time being upset and being frustrated at myself and having a negative attitude because of one mistake I made, because my team needs me and I'm checking out myself. I'm checking myself out from the game because I'm mad at myself. When in reality, like, my coach isn't mad at me. My teammates aren't mad at me. That mistake did not just lose us the game. Like, I really started to hold myself accountable for my own behavior and my actions, and realizing, like, how my attitude and how I handled situations was affecting my teammates as well. And then my senior year, it was a crazy year. We came into the fall with a ton of freshmen. We were looking amazing, absolutely amazing. And my first game, I got injured and I was out for 4 or 5 games. Came back for one game and I wasn't allowed to really go as hard as I wanted to. And I just kept begging my coach for more playing time. I was like, please just let me go. Like, let me go. And I just, all I wanted to do was play. And then I was finally cleared and coronavirus hit and our season got canceled. And at that point, I really found myself kind of slipping and being extremely hard on myself and just upset with kind of how the way things ended. I was frustrated that I didn't get to play my senior year. I was frustrated that my senior year was cut in half. I was frustrated that I didn't get to leave my legacy. And we had a meeting with Dr. P in May, and I just remember telling him and telling my teammates, like, I'm lost. Like, there's so much unknown. I feel like I'm not necessarily upset at myself for mistakes anymore, but like, I couldn't handle the thought of the unknown. And I mean, back in May and March, we didn't know anything. We were on strict lockdown. We didn't have classes in person. I didn't see my family in 9 months. I hadn't seen anyone. And I was just like, I didn't know what to do. And so finally, it just clicked again. And I realized, like, I have to take care of myself in order to take care of those around me and be the teammate that I need to be. So, during quarantine, I definitely made a lot more time to sit down, take care of my body, do yoga. And while I was doing that and taking care of my body and working on being 100% healthy and getting over this injury, that's when I started trying to be more mindful of my body when I was working out, which is something we've talked about a lot with my team. And that was one thing that just never really made sense to me. Cause my mindset for a workout is like, the faster you go, the faster it's over. I'm not going to have to deal with this running anymore. Or I'm not going to have to deal with this heavy weight anymore. Like, let me just bust out really quick. But when I was injured, I wasn't lifting heavy. I wasn't running as fast as I used to. And like, just those slow jogs and those slow movements that my body really needed was something that woke me up and kind of let me know that, like, I need to be aware of my body, because my injury was something from overuse and going too hard and not being aware of my body. And I was pushing myself so hard that I wasn't aware of what it was doing to my body. So for me, it's definitely been a step process. My junior year, it clicked in lacrosse. And then in that spring of junior year, I was like, Dr. P, I have no idea how to do this in real life. Like, I could take a Dr. P moment on the lacrosse field. Like, I get it. But like, how's this supposed to help me in school? Like, how is this supposed to help me be a better person? Like, this is not helping me. But how do you do this every day? And once again, in quarantine, it just like, it hit. And I realized, if I'm not taking care of my body, if I'm not taking care of my mind, if I'm not, being aware of it, I can't help other people. I can't perform my best for my teammates. And I can't take care of my patients as well as I know I can. So that's brief story, I guess. I feel like I could talk about it for hours.
Yeah. I mean, I love hearing this journey that you've been on. Cause I think so many of the pieces that you're highlighting are things that we often think about or talk about in terms of, like, you know, what this training might look like. You know, what does doing like long-term MSPE with a team, like, what actually happens when you do that? And like, yeah, not it doesn't click with everyone right off the bat. Sometimes it takes time, like even more than just the six initial sessions of MSPE. Sometimes a couple seasons, right? It takes time. But right, with committed practice, right? Like ongoing exposure to it, it does eventually click, right? And I think that's an experiential thing. Like that you're, you know, time and time again thinking about these concepts, even if you're not necessarily like doing the formal practice in a dedicated way, like there's that seed is still planted, right? You're still kind of on some level reminded to like shift into these alternate perspectives on like the mistakes that you make. And then, yeah, eventually, right, you do, you see like, oh, that helps me. Like, yeah. I see the outcome. I see the benefit, right? And now mm-hmm. I feel motivated to do it. But the other thing that I really just like loved about your your story was the process of transitioning to applying mindfulness outside of your sport. Because it's another thing we talk about all the time. Like MSPE is, or mindfulness anyway, like is not just about sport performance, right? Like it really is about a way of being, right? Like,
yeah.
And that applies to all these different domains in your life. And so to hear you talk about like essentially making those connections on your own, allowing your own experience to guide you, seeing the parallels and finding that new sense of calm amidst the kind of chaos and uncertainty. It's just, I don't know. It's like really, especially considering how it's like you and I have been working together so long. It's like so heartwarming to hear like, oh yeah, this really had an impact.
Well, and I think now, 5 years later, I see mindfulness in this practice as playing a sport. So in order for me to get better at mindfulness and being able to be mindful during athletics, you have to practice outside. You have to be willing to work on it on your own. And at first, that wasn't something I was willing to do or really aware that I had to do. And now, looking back at it, it's just like lacrosse. Like if I want to get better at lacrosse, I got to be practicing my shot. I have to be running as much as I can. I have to be constantly working on my own in addition to practice to be the best that I can. And it's the same with mindfulness. If I want to be the best that I can be at mindfulness, you got to practice, you got to get better. You have to do it outside of your Dr. P meetings or whatever it may be.
What a great description of how to overcome the mental training paradox, which is something that we've written a lot about and talked about, this sort of double standard that we have for physical versus mental training. And you know, we try to overcome it in our writing or in our teaching by talking about the need to commit to both in a similar way. And just what you said, I think is so important, that when you think about this, like you think about your sport, you know, you've got to be doing this outside. I think that's so well said, and it's so meaningful, I guess, for me personally, to hear how you've taken that on and you're sort of a living example of how to overcome this paradox. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
I think one other thing that really stood out to me, I certainly echo a lot of what Tim was saying in your journey, which is so rich and so fascinating to listen to, is, you know, you hit on a couple of really important things. And one of the things we actually did talk to your coach about, she was a podcast guest in our first season, and she said something very similar to the effect that it takes time. And we had a really interesting discussion with her about, well, how do you work with that in this immediate gratification, results-oriented world that is sports, right? How do you integrate these ideas that to really do this effectively, it takes time, and yet we need results yesterday. And now to even add another layer, something that's so striking about your journey is that it's not linear. Right? It's not like, oh, I lift these weights, I get stronger, I see a linear progression. It's like, oh, okay, I kind of get this mindfulness stuff in lacrosse, but oh my gosh, the pandemic hit. And it like completely threw off this routine that I had developed for myself. And it almost sounds like you had to rediscover, well, what does being mindful mean in this entirely new, unexpected context? Mm-hmm. And okay, so all of that to say, I want to ask you a similar question to what I asked your coach at the time that we interviewed her, with this extra layer built in now. What would you say to fellow athletes, to coaches who really might be interested in mindfulness or might hear your journey and think, wow, that sounds great, but I don't have 5 years or you know, I need to get better today. Right? Like why would you say this was worth it to you? And what advice would you give them about how this actually unfolds and how it can work?
Mm-hmm. I mean, first of all, when you think about being an athlete, you don't automatically become good at your sport. Like, if you look at most of my teammates and most professional athletes, like they've been playing their sport since 3 years old and practiced and played and spent so much time to become the greatest at this sport. And if you just sit for 5 minutes a day, and which is a fraction of the time you've spent to become a better athlete, to take care of your mental health and your mind, you will see those results. It is so incredibly worth it, because if you are taking care of your mind, I've said it multiple times, if you're taking care of your mind and taking care of yourself mentally, you will perform better in every aspect of your life. I think going back to that as well, or not back to that. Anyways, I have a passion for mental health, and I've battled mental health my whole life. And my senior year, along with the injury, I got diagnosed with clinical depression and moderate anxiety disorder. And at that point, I was extremely hard on myself, and just athletics wise, school performance wise, my image, my body image, my hair, my nails, like just so hard on myself. And I know for a fact that is something that athletes deal with every day. And it's not recognized nearly enough. And I truly believe that practicing mindfulness and teaching athletes how to be present and be aware of themselves and their mind just as much as they are aware of their bodies and their athletic abilities will definitely benefit their performance on the field and in the classroom and in the real world. And I know a lot of coaches out there are not necessarily trying to build just great athletes. They want to build great people. They want to help you become a functioning person of society. And I think that teaching an athlete and coaching them through mindfulness will help them in all of those aspects. And it's something that's very valuable, and you're not just going to see it on the field or on the court. These athletes are going to see it all over their lives. And that's definitely what's happened for me.
Yeah. It's just so powerful to hear that. And I mean, you know, summarize, I guess, what you're saying, or what I'm hearing you saying kind of, yeah. I guess in response to Keith's question about, well, what happens if I don't have 5 years? It's like, well, it's not just about the athletic outcomes, right? This really is geared towards helping the whole person. Right. And so if as a coach, if your only concern is having these bodies show up and perform certain skills and do it so that you get trophies, right, you miss out on all these other parts of your athlete's identity, all these other parts that end up impacting their performance, right? So it's like if you were to bring this in, like you said, I loved what you said, you know, five minutes a day, a tiny fraction of the time that we're willing to dedicate to physical training, right? And then we have no reservations about the idea that, oh, it takes many years physically to build up, right? But suddenly it was like, oh, but it might take years to develop these mental capacities. Like, well, no, I don't have that kind of time. But of course, it made total sense to you from the physical perspective. To really highlight, it's not just about kind of improving performance on the field, though that does happen, right? But it's really about giving people the perspective, the capacity, the skills, right, to be able to navigate all of the ups and downs in life, not just the mistakes we make, you know, on the field, but right, the uncertainty of the pandemic. I remember that meeting we had in May, you know, and just trying to talk to the team about how, like, you know, we've been practicing how to deal with uncertainty for 4 years now, but we just applied it very explicitly, like on the field. But, you know, same principles apply. We're living in this world where, you know, our expectations are constantly getting dashed, right? And we need to recognize the expectations we create and the disappointment that creates. And it's mindfulness, but just in a slightly different perspective. And it really, like, I love that it kind of clicked for you like that.
Yeah, I would say if you're not a coach that is willing to help your athletes develop off the field, you're going to be that coach that is the reason an athlete quits that sport. If you're not a coach that is willing to care about your athletes enough to worry about their mental health and worry about teaching them this practice and really helping them develop and learn how to cope the uncertainty of life and the ups and downs of life, then what are you coaching for? You know, it's the, I think every athlete's had that one coach that they only care about winning, and they don't care if you're going to class. They don't care if what's going on at home. They don't care if you don't have the money to eat. They don't care. And those are the coaches that make athletes not want to play. And the coaches that care about you off the field, on the field, are constantly doing everything they can to make you better as not only an athlete, but a person, are the coaches that are in athletes' life forever. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, I mean, I think what you're speaking about is so important, and something that comes up in so many different ways in doing the work that we do with MSPE. Like when we do our instructor trainings, one of the most common questions we get is like, how do you advertise this? How do you package this? How do you sell this idea? And if you're talking to a coach about maybe working with their team, you know, if they kind of want to know the bottom line stuff, and this isn't bottom line practices, you know, these are things that are holistic. You know, that's the word that keeps coming to my mind as I'm listening to you, is this is holistic. And it's not easy to package it. It's not easy to help someone understand. I think it takes someone like you, Elle, to be honest, who can put such frank and honest, candid language to what your experience is with this. And I think you've done a great job of that today. I mean, there are so many things that you're saying that are just sort of wow statements for me. And at least it kind of reminds me why we're doing what we're doing, to be honest. And I don't mean to overstate that, but it's really mm-hmm. it's so powerful to hear all the different ways that this has influenced you. And I don't hear you saying, you know, hey, you got to drink the Kool-Aid, you know, this is going to fix all your problems, right? You're saying this is hard work. This is something you need to invest in. But it's something that can really help you with a number of challenges that we face over the course of our lives, whether that's as a nurse in training, whether that's as a student athlete, right? And the practice itself is not A plus B equals C, is not I do this to get some result. It's really, the whole thing is holistic, and that's just not easy to bottle. That's not easy mm-hmm. to sell. I think it takes stories mm-hmm. like yours to really make it come alive. I'm just so excited that you've been willing to share all this. It's great. Yeah.
And I'm that kind of person in my medical practice as well. I've always believed kind of in that your first line of defense is that holistic lifestyle of, am I taking care of my body? Am I drinking enough water? Am I taking my vitamins? Am I taking care of my mental health? Am I taking care of my mind? And then when I've done everything I can is when you can resort to medicine. And I kind of see that see it relate to mindfulness as well. And with my own mental health, I found myself trying to cope and using my experience with mindfulness and meditation to try and help myself feel better and decrease the anxiety and get myself up out of bed. And when I realized that wasn't working, is when I reached out for help. But I think the holistic approach is hard to sell as well. And we're in a society where, like we were saying before, it's people want fast results, people want immediate results. And unfortunately, that's not something you're going to get. But you're also not going to get that in a lot of aspects of life. You're not going to get it in athletics. You're not going to get good at nursing overnight. You're not going to get good at being a doctor overnight. It's, you put years and years and years into becoming great. So why not put years and years and years into becoming mindful?
Wow. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah, I love it. You know, and it's like that point about it's really about striving, right? But like always wanting to be better and wanting fast results. And I find myself thinking like, yeah, and always wanting control. Right? I do X and I get Y every time, no matter what, regardless of circumstances, right? I want it to be predictable. And I think that's you know, even I think you can even approach mindfulness that way, with the idea of like, oh, if I get really mindful, I'll never have anxiety, or I'll never get upset, right? This is the perfect way to control all my emotions. Like, no, this doesn't, mindfulness doesn't stop you from having crises. It doesn't stop you from experiencing anxiety or depression. I think it can probably mitigate those things, and it can help you navigate those things when they come up in wiser or healthier ways. And I think it also contributes to that sense of openness when, you know what, perhaps in this moment, like kind of committing to my meditation practice isn't enough, right? And I need to reach out, you know, to a therapist or a psychiatrist, right? But I think mindfulness helps us do that too, because it keeps us adaptable. Such a kind of focal point is, you know, look at what's here in front of you. I mean, like your meditation, notice 5 things you never noticed before, right? Bring yourself into the moment and see what information is there. And so it sounds like you were able to kind of do that. You're like, okay, I'm not feeling mentally like as well as I know I normally do. I'm trying all of these things that usually help me and they're not helping me right now. So I need something else, you know? And I know, certainly from my experience working in college counseling centers, how many people get stuck right before that ask for help point, right? It's just like, I'm trying all the things I need to do. Like, let me just try some more, or let me just give up, but not being able to adapt. So I just, that piece to me feels so, so powerful. I mean, that to me feels like that's the shift out of sport into life. Like, it's about mm-hmm. openness and adaptability.
Mm-hmm. And I think going back, mindfulness helps you be aware. And if I hadn't, I really do think if I hadn't been practicing for as long as I had, or for as much as I had, I wouldn't be able to recognize the fact that the way I was feeling in the fall was not okay, was not normal, was not something that everyone deals with, kind of thing. And kind of being able to recognize what is my normal, what is my body trying to tell me, what is my brain trying to tell me. And if I hadn't been able to be aware of what was going on with my body, I definitely wouldn't have been able to take care of myself. And I think I would have had a much different result than I had. So it's definitely changed my life.
Mm. Yeah. Wow. Well, that is certainly a powerful note for us to end the conversation on.
We
just so appreciate you taking the time, Elle, to talk with us and to share your journey and all of your vulnerability in this conversation, and just being willing to tell us what this has been like for you. We really, really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Course.
And I have to say, I am pleased that you named a lap after Tim. I don't know if that's
it's true. We've named a lot after him. We have our Dr. P lap. We have Take a Dr. P Moment. We have our 2 minutes of Dr. P time.
That's great.
He's
I love it.
Quite famous on the Marymount Women's Lacrosse team.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, when you first said that, I was like, having a running lap named after me, how would I feel about that? Is that a flattering thing or not? But I think as you've described more about it, I think it sounds really nice.
Yes. It's a compliment.
Yes.
Well, I take it as such.
Good.
Well, and thank you to everyone who listens. And we just want to remind you that if anyone would like to be in touch with us, to connect with us, please feel free to visit our MSPE website at mindfulsportperformance.org. You can also connect with us on our MSPE Facebook page, or you can connect with me, Dr. Keith Kaufman, on Twitter. My handle is @mindfulsportdoc. We are also extremely excited to announce that we are launching a YouTube channel where we are posting the different meditations that we have led or our guests have led on each of our episodes. So if you would like to have this be a part of your meditation practice, then please feel free to visit our Mindful Sport Performance Podcast YouTube channel as well. And hopefully we can include Elle's in that list. We loved doing that practice with her earlier today. So again, thank you to everyone who listened. Thank you to our producer, Taylor Brown, from UT Austin and Enduro Minds. And thank you to our colleague, Dr. Carol Glass, for all of her support behind the scenes. And we will see you next time.
Thanks, everybody.